1 Corinthians, Paul says, "For we are God's fellow workers. You are God's field. You are God's building. According to the grace of God which was given to me, as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another builds upon it. But let each one take heed how he builds on it, for no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid, which is Jesus Christ." In this podcast, we explore those who went the wrong way. We examine how it happened, why it happened, and who it happened to. But most importantly, we always ask the question, could it happen to us? Thanks for joining us here on Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Before we begin, we want to be clear, the opinions that we present are ours alone and do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of our respective churches or employers. Now, let's begin. Oh, welcome back to Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. We're a podcast vlog group dedicated to researching the intersection of religious belief, specifically with cults and Christianity, right? And where things land. And this week, right, this month, right, this whole, I don't know, however many weeks it is. Is it 4 weeks?
Something like that. However much talking
we're talking about. That we're talking, right, about Charles Manson and the Manson family. As Christians, it can be difficult for us to understand how someone like Manson can claim to have this connection, even more than a connection. He claimed to be Jesus, and yet encourage and orchestrate the violent, heinous acts that he did.
It's not the Jesus, right? I know.
It's not the Jesus that I know either. But it's important that we look at these things as Christians and find out exactly where that line should have been drawn, right? And tonight, or I guess today, I don't know what time we're actually releasing this video on YouTube, but we're looking specifically at the theology of Charles Manson, which, you know, when you mentioned that you wanted to talk about Manson, right, what was the first thing that I said?
I don't. You weren't terribly interested, though.
I wasn't, because I was like, there's not a whole lot of theological stuff there. I mean, he's a murderer. He's a psychopath. But the more that I dug, right, the more that I looked at it, I'm like, wow. Right? It's not cohesive, coherent theology, right? It's definitely not systematic theology like you find in the Protestant world. But there's teachings there about the spiritual realm. There's teachings there about Jesus. There's teachings about other things.
I mean, wrong teachings, but yes.
And they're right. Yeah, they're way out there and way wrong. But I was wrong, right? I know you probably don't hear that enough from me.
I'm surprised.
I was wrong. Yeah, I did. I was just like, I don't have any interest in this, but I am glad that you pushed and said, we need to talk about
there, Manson. There is a lot to Manson. You know, there's the story and the media hype and everything. We the media hyped and made him out to be this big, bad serial killer guy. But the truth was...
Which he was.
He was. but he also made a lot of people a lot of money in ratings, too. And I don't know that every story was completely true.
Yeah.
But he considered himself a guru. True. He started out as that. There is some religion behind this. He wasn't just all about killing people. Matter of fact, he didn't even start out being about killing people. I don't think that was originally his plan.
No, not originally. I think after some of the reading that I did, right, I don't think it was his plan until he was really rejected. Right, for his music, for whatever other advances that he made.
A lot of cult leaders, he painted himself into a corner. You know, when you're a doomsday cult person, or you know, you're preaching all this doomsday stuff, and then doomsday don't happen the way you said, You have to figure something out. This is something that's common in a lot of cults we talk about. Is they so that's something we should mention here right off. Is he was very apocalyptic, right? He was very, calling for very. What the end of the world. Most of the Bible that he followed, that he studied, was Revelation. I don't know that he ever quoted anything else.
No, not really. Looking at it, kind of my notes, I do. I think everything came from Revelation. I mean, when we get into, well, we can start out, right? A lot of his stuff came from the Bible, right? More specifically, Revelation, right? But he pulled a lot of teachings out of Scientology, right? Which we talked about kind of briefly.
He studied Scientology in prison.
He studied it in prison, learned a lot about it, even went so far as to go to probably one of the Scientology, do they call them temples? Or
the orgs.
Buildings, or the orgs in Los Angeles, and went and asked, what is someone supposed to do when they've been cleared, right? And they gave him all these different things that a cleared person does, and he turned around and walked off because he was already doing all those things, right? So he declared himself to be clear and thus an operating
thing. And we should mention, right, that at that time in Scientology, there was no one except L. Ron Hubbard himself who was clear.
Right. Yep.
They had not even finished all the OT levels themselves.
Kind of just... Yeah, he just took it upon himself because he was already doing these things, so therefore he must be clear, right? On top of that, he took a lot of, I hate to use the word theology, but he took a lot of teachings from the Beatles, the musicians, right? And turned it into theology.
Some of which they didn't even mean. So like let's talk about the theology of the Beatles real quick. Do you remember the theology of the Beatles?
So the White Album was the big one for him. Each song was prophecy in and of itself, right? Telling him, right? It was in some of the songs, it was the Beatles crying out and saying, "We want to come live with you, Charles Manson," because the Beatles knew who he was.
They didn't.
Right. right. Of course. Or some of the songs were like Revolution, right? Revolution, if I remember right, it's on the White Album, was all about Helter Skelter, right? The coming race war, the coming Armageddon. Others were just anti-government, anti-establishment teachings that he turned and twisted and said, "This is about me because it's, I'm anti-government," and so.
So let's talk about that, the twisting though. So, but the Beatles themselves are interesting in their theology, because the Beatles started out with not a whole lot of theology, and they were just, you know, kind of musicians, and they kind of got into this counterculture after they came to America. They got into the counterculture hippie movement thing, and they did an album about hippies and drugs, and that was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Band.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of references, and they did a lot of symbolic things in their songs. Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, talking about LSD, really.
Right.
Which it's funny how our culture works, because they meant it for that, but literally there is a children's cartoon on Netflix, which is a legit children's cartoon, not talking about drugs. Based on nothing but Beatles songs. It's about these bugs who do Beatles songs, and it starts with Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
It's crazy.
But let's remember they're musicians and they're trying to make a living too. There was some counterculture stuff.
Right.
But also, as they got rich and famous, there's a lot of drugs on the road. There's a lot of, it's a really stressful thing. They started looking for spiritual guidance too. They reached out to the, what's his name?
Yep. The Dalai Lama. If I,
Maharishi.
Maharishi.
He was a very famous Hindu
Buddhist
leader.
Hindu leader.
Guru. And they actually went and spent some time with him. And they left him. They spent quite a bit of time with him, and it influenced them. And some of them stayed in that belief anyways, the Eastern religion stuff. Yeah. Not Eastern Christianity, but Eastern religions, just to make that clear.
Yep. Big difference.
For a long time. But they left him, Maharishna, after they found that he was basically sleeping with his followers when that was what he preached against, and eating steak and stuff when he preached being a vegetarian and all this. The Beach Boys, who we talked about being associated with Charles Manson, also followed him. Matter of fact, the Beach Boys, while the Beatles were getting popular, the Beach Boys were kind of declining in popularity. They kind of had a different type of music. They kind of intersected around the same time, right? The Beach Boys also followed the same thing. Yep. They were somewhat friends with the Beatles, and they followed the same guru. They even brought him on tour, one of their worst tours they ever did. And the tour got cut off early because they thought, because they were following this guru, they'd bring him out to preach before one of their concerts. And their people wanted to hear them sing, not this guru preach to them. And they had like people throwing cans and tomatoes on the stage. And then the next concert up only sold 200 tickets, and the promoters canceled the whole thing and sent them home. It was pretty sad. But what I bring that up because the Beach Boys themselves were influenced by this Eastern spirituality stuff. And they used a lot of symbols and things in their songs. And so a lot of people thought Beatles music talked to them. Listen, I love some good chill out. Just listen to some Beatles.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really put a lot of stock into their music. It's not the music I grew up with per se, but it's good relaxing music to me. But some people put a lot of stock. They were super popular. Okay. And Charles Manson, he got it in his head. They were speaking to him personally. Like you said, he didn't know them from Adam, but he thought they were friends.
Right. Yep. He did. And they... He just took every little thing, you know, a little word here, a little word there. And
now, in previous podcasts, you came up with we didn't come up with it, but you've used a term for that, for when we're using the Bible and we pick and choose. Put him on the spot. You don't remember what the term is.
Which, I was going to say, I mean, are you talking about, like, pre-list?
Say that again.
Is that the word that you're thinking of?
Is that where pre-list? You take a little piece and you just use that little piece and ignore the rest of it?
No, that would be...
proof texting, there we go. He did an awful lot of that, as if that was scripture. And, he thought they were talking to him, and he just manipulated it. Helter Skelter, nobody else thinks it's about a race war, but he sure thought it was.
Right. Yep. And a big part of that, right, that's a good segue, right, along with Scientology, the Bible, and the Beatles... He took a lot. I say he took a lot. He was most likely pretty heavily influenced by Nietzsche and the Nazis. He is on record, right? We already know him, and he's a racist, right? But he's on record, you know, believing in a master race like Nietzsche did, like the Nazis did. Even at one point is quoted as saying Hitler was a tuned in guy who had leveled the karma of the Jews.
That just sounds horrible.
So, right? Yeah, it's just like, I mean, it's such a strange phrase to hear to begin with, right?
And he often said things.
It's not how we speak today.
To get reactions out of people. There's interviews and things that he's done from prison over the years, and he played the insane game often to get reactions out of people. He wanted to be famous, and he got famous by being insane. But we don't think he was really insane.
Yep.
Nobody thinks he was really insane. You disagree.
Before I started reading all of this, right? Before I started reading all of this, I would have said, no, he was just a crazy person. But given some of the things that he taught, I think you're right. I don't think he was crazy. I think it was something else. And we'll get to that.
I think a lot of people would agree with that too.
So as part of his taking of these things, he implied, if not outright explicitly stated, right, that he was Jesus. Which, when we get to our response episode, right, we're going to have a long conversation about people who say that they're Jesus, because
Jesus talked about people like that.
Reincarnation, right? But he would claim that he was reincarnated Jesus. Which would mean that at some point between ascension and this point, that Jesus was no longer the incarnate Son of God. So you get into some weird, weird requirements to make reincarnated Jesus work. But he spent time and he talked to his followers and taught them how, as part of his teachings on love, right? He had lived 2,000 years before and died, right, for mankind. He talked about how he'd experienced death before and that it was absolutely beautiful. Right? It was a beautiful thing. Death was a good thing for Charles Manson.
I know he often said, there is no life, there is no death. He often said, I am God, I am the devil.
Yep. I sent you a quote. I really wish that I'd copied it here, but one of his followers, it's like 2 weeks ago that I sent it to you. We've had too many other chats since then. Go back and find it. But one of his followers was talking about how Charlie, or in his case, he was calling him JC still, for Jesus Christ. You know, death meant nothing to him, right? He could no sooner kill you as love you, right? It didn't matter to him, right? For him, there was no death. And this follower even went on to say that Charlie would rather see you die than to see you step on an ant. Right? He just had this weird ideology around death.
Yeah, so they weren't allowed to kill animals. Right. Which became a problem at one time because he was trying out for a big record producer guy, and he wanted some new clothes for that, and he wanted his girls to make him some buckskin clothes. And later, when he was arrested, he was wearing those buckskin clothes later on. And they had to get buckskin clothes, but they weren't allowed to go out and kill a buck. So that made it harder.
Yeah. So at one point he recounts a story of a previous psilocybin trip, right? So psilocybin is a hallucinogenic drug, right? In which he was on a bed, right? So he had laid down, tripping out, and the bed turned into a cross, and he can feel the nails and the spear in his side. And he looks down to see Mary Magdalene, who in his vision was in the form of Mary Bruner, right? Which was his first wife. Were they officially married? Right. So it's kind of that weird, right? She was the first follower, right? First female follower of his. So he takes all of these things, right? And he's just constantly pushing.
Well, there's
out
tales that he used to crucify himself out at Spahn Ranch. He would crucify himself and then have sexual rituals afterwards.
Right. Yeah, they did a lot of those rituals.
When one of his followers, when she was first brought out there, some of the other girls had told her, you need to meet Charlie, you need to meet Charlie. She was following somebody else, another kind of guru type guy, who sort of followed Charlie, mm-hmm. but wasn't part of the family. He just sort of traveled around with his girls. They told her, don't follow Bobby. Bobby's just pretty, but Charlie, you know, Charlie's Jesus. And so they brought her. She was seeking something new, And when she met him, he was crucifying himself. He was hanging on a cross. Not dying, of course, because he wasn't going to do that. But right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Mm. It's something. As part of this teaching that he's Jesus, right? He changed his name, right? Did you know that he?
Oh, hey, look, a promo. Guess this is a new thing. Did you know that listening to us is not the only way to find out about these groups? We put all of our notes in the form of a blog with references on a webpage for each episode. We know what it's like to listen to someone talk about something and be unsure of exactly where they got that information. We want you to be sure that you can always go back and find exactly what we found and read it for yourselves. Plus, it's a great place to leave comments and feedback on various groups, and maybe, just maybe, one of these days, a place that we can pick up some cool merch. Come and check it out at faithfraudsfalsehoods.com. Now back to the show.
All right, so we were chatting, right? And I was pointing out that Charles had changed his name, right? Did you...
Yeah, you said he changed it, like, legally, or...
You know, a lot of the things around cult leaders and, you know, murderers, right? Legal is not always necessarily the case, right? He may not have gone to the courthouse and filed the paperwork, paid the money to legally change his name on his Social Security forms. But he went from being Charles Mills Manson to Charles Willis Manson. Doesn't seem like, I'm like, okay, well, that doesn't make much sense. Well, apparently his intention was for people to understand it as Charles Will is man's son. Right? So, pointing himself back to, you know, kind of that son of man theology around Christ, right? And how his...
Well, you know, that's interesting, the changing of names. Because his followers, he encouraged them to change their names and to pick out new names. That was also a behavior that Jesus had in real life. And that sometimes he changed his followers' names.
The church still does that.
So I wonder if that was part of his related
Probably.
Thing, you know?
It's a lot of, right, so... The church today still encourages people, right, to pick a patron saint, someone that they look up to, that they watch out or look to for guidance, for instruction on how do you live life, right? And even today, right, the expectation is that you don't celebrate Matt's birthday, right? You celebrate your patron saint's day, right? So everyone who's patron saint happens to be Matthew, right? Celebrates on Matthew's day rather than on Matt's day, right? That.
How do you know I won't become a patron
absolutely.
Saint?
Absolutely, I would love that for you.
You gonna submit the petition for me?
Well, but to do that, you probably have to die.
Where's that?
And I really don't want you to die. So there's that.
I mean, it's appointed
a time for
man to
but,
die.
We'll worry about that when we get to that, right?
Okay.
But, yeah, so the point of it being, right, is kind of that that release of the self and taking on the participation in the community. So most likely Manson was doing the same thing, right? Forcing people to give up themselves, which he used a lot, right? A big thing that he did was separate people from their comfort zones, was split them out away from whatever it is that makes them happy. Even taking it so far as to prey on the things that make them most afraid, right? So if, you know, if someone was scared of certain situations, he intentionally forced them into those kind of situations to make them.
He taught them to get past their hang-ups.
To get past it, to make them reliant on him, right? Even going so far, right? One of the guys in Bugliosi's book, right, explains Manson, if he ever found out that you were scared of him, was absolutely terrifying, right? Because this guy was one of those that was scared of Manson. And at one point, Manson attacked him, like physically attacked him and choked him nearly to death as a point of, I want you afraid of me. And then the moment the guy finally just said, you know what, I'm done, I'm going to fight back, Manson ran scared, right? Because he no longer had the power.
So he did this with several of his male followers. One famous example is with Tex Watson, who was one of the killers. So he was strangling him, and at a certain point, Tex quit fighting. That's the only thing that would stop Manson, is if you stopped. Because Manson was always talking about giving up your ego, and he considered that giving up your ego. If he just submitted that, okay, he's going to kill me, and he just laid there, and that finally made Manson stop. Manson would also be super kind to him. He did the traditional love bombing thing, especially to his female followers. Even to his male followers, he would give them things. He would call them important. He would insult them in one hand and then super encourage them and congratulate them in another. He famously made one of his followers strip naked in front of the whole group. She had some scars and some deformities. And he pointed out all of her scars and all of her deformities in front of the whole group while she stands naked in front of them. And then he praised her and told her how wonderful she was and how strong. I don't want to jump ahead too much, but are you fixing to lead to the part about biological parents?
I wasn't. It's not on my notes.
Well, let me mention that real quick. So this is part of his theology too, is he had a big hang up about biological parents. As you know, his biological parents weren't great. His dad ran off. His mom mostly ran off. So he believed that people were corrupted by their biological parents, and that they are the ones who gave people most of their hangups. So as you mentioned, he tried to separate people. He demanded separation from your family. He didn't allow that. He had one follower who was 14 years old whenever he took her into the family, and her dad fought him. This was one of the famous people. Her dad put a gun to his head, and Charlie didn't care about dying, and he told him, okay, pull the trigger. And the guy didn't. Famously, the guy later came and tried to join the cult himself, and Charlie let him hang around a little bit, but never would let him fully join the cult. He let him sleep with the girls, but didn't really let him join the cult fully because he didn't want him around the daughter because of the hang-ups. Also, something we haven't mentioned is the children. Mary had a child. Several of the girls had children. Some brought children into the cult. He believed that they all raised the children together, but he would not let the biological parents spend very, very little time with their child because he believed any time they spent with their child was corrupting their child, even if they were part of the family. So it was a big part of his theology about pulling away from your biological parents. Conveniently, that helped him isolate his
followers. we've mentioned, the family a couple of times, right? It's what they called themselves, right? They were the family. And Manson would draw these people in. Oh, I didn't hit the mute button. That's right. Guess I'll edit that one.
That's okay. Right. We're not audio only anymore. So since we're video, they see it anyway. I'm having to learn that myself. I was trying to fix my collar, and I'm like, well, they can see me fixing my collar, so I don't guess it matters.
So the family, right, is this group, and Manson would bring people in, and they, I know when we get to the social side of things, right, we'll get into all of the hypersexuality and issues related there, but one of the guys think it was a guy, yeah, on record with Bugliosi's book, right, talks about how he doesn't want to talk about Manson, right, because he can feel him, right? He can feel his vibrations. And at first I was like, okay, that's 60s hippies. Yeah, that's part of it, right? But then he goes on and he explains, you know, to bring these girls in, especially this guy didn't really know all the details and didn't want to talk about it because it was super occult, super evil and dark.
So a famous story is he brought this one young girl. He had, he brought her onto the bus. He was talking to her. She thought they were groovy. They smoked a little pot together and he sat with her. They both sat naked, cross-legged, knees touching, hands touching, face to face. And yes, they believed it was a spiritual thing and they were having a spiritual response. Another thing along that same line is that one of them ran away once.
Right.
A few ran away over the years, but one of them ran away and he drove to exactly where she was and got her. Now, there was no like smartphones right. and GPS and stuff yeah. back then. This was the 60s. And now he used a lot of manipulation techniques that a lot of cult leaders do in that he found out information they didn't think they were yeah. finding out and things like that. But either way, he drove directly to her and got her. So after that, all of his followers believed that if you were to run or you could do anything, that Charlie could see you. They thought he was omnipresent. And they thought Charlie was
watching. And, you know, I kind of alluded earlier to he's not, maybe not insane, but it's something else. You know, we kind of talked about it with Heaven's Gate, right? I would not rule out some sort of demonic presence in this situation. The things that...
See, I worry about saying demonic presence because I don't want to give the guy some sort of legitimacy. You know what I'm saying? But I get what you're saying, and you're not the first person right. to say that about Charles Manson. People who followed him, like I said, they thought he was omnipresent. Even the ones who were friends with him who didn't think he was,
right.
you know, Jesus Christ.
There was something.
Thought there was something about it.
And when you start talking about, I'm manipulating these people, bringing them into the group, using occultic practices and ritual, it's very, very easy to make that jump, right, into there's something. Something more. So the family, well, let's jump right before that statement. A big part of Manson's teachings were around Helter Skelter, right? That race war, black man rising up against the white, taking over, ruling the world. Instead of the white man being in charge, the black man would be in charge. Go ahead.
He preached that the black people were inferior, but to his followers, to most of them, he did not preach right. hatefully against them. He even told them one time, he's like, when the straight Satans, the biker gangs around, you may hear them talking bad things and saying bad words about black people
right.
and stuff. I'm not even going to repeat on this podcast. You know, that's not really my thing. I don't really believe that. But you may hear me saying some of that around them because I'm trying to keep them on our side and all this. But they're not part of this. But he was using them to make money off of drug deals. He was never terribly financially successful. But they even said that so that they heard contradictions because he teaches, you know, peace and love and all this. But mm-hmm. he was scared. It was said that when he met the Black Panthers, when he went to Berkeley,
right.
he was scared of them.
I mean, a lot of people were scared of Black Panthers. Not, I mean, that was that. But he had a different
part of the point.
Fear of them than just, oh, they're a bunch of guys that are going to beat a bunch of people up. He really felt like they were going to start just killing white people.
Oh yeah, he thought that would be part of the Helter Skelter thing. He had his after he killed the black drug dealer, he had had his followers worried that the Black Panthers were going to come just raid Spawn Ranch where they were staying, and just come out to kill them all.
Yep. So Armageddon, right? Which he's using Armageddon as the term, right? Is found in Revelation, right? The final battle. In order for him and the family to survive it, and this will be our last point, because this one's going to take us down a deep, deep, deep hole. Pun intended. They started searching. He called it a cave, right, in Death Valley.
Bottomless cave.
He initially called it this, just, you know, we got to go out and find the cave for us to live in. And then as the teachings kind of progressed, it became a bigger cave, and then eventually a bottomless cave. Bottomless as in the abyss, right? That he and his followers were going to enter into the abyss of Revelation. And that's where they were going to live. And there were already civilizations that had survived cataclysmic events in the past living there. And so they were all going to go and just live in the abyss until the end of Armageddon, in which God was going to send an angel and open it up, and they were going to all come out, and he was going to be in charge. Which, if y'all know Revelation, that's not a positive thing. To be the one in charge of the abyss.
After the black people took over the world and failed at ruling the world. Also, this is important for his girls. He taught them that they because they liked playing games.
Yeah.
And so he tried to play into things being their idea, right? And one of the games they liked playing was that they would become fairies and things. So he taught them that when they were down there in this bottomless cave, that they could become whatever they wanted to be, if they wanted it enough, so they could become fairies or
because it was
dogs
described.
Or whatever. One of them thought she was fixing to sprout wings. Like, she was in pain, writhing, because she thought her wings were sprouting.
Yeah, it's the way that he described the abyss, right, was how John the Revelator describes the new heavens, right, filled with gold, trees bearing 12 kinds of fruit, different kind every month. No need for lights because the walls glow in the abyss rather than it being Jesus as the light source of new heavens and new earth. Warm springs, fresh water, you know, rivers of milk and honey. Right? Like, how you read about the new heavens and the new earth is how Charles Manson described the abyss.
Remember, the people he was preaching to were literally eating out of garbage dumpsters.
Yeah, so this whole idea of paradise, they were searching for it. Like, they were legitimately spending time in the deserts of Death Valley searching to find this place.
Part of how they got caught is they spent so much time doing that, and they ran across other people and national park people and stuff. But yes, he told them about where it was, but not exactly, that they had to find it. And so by the end, they committed the murders, and he had them out there searching and running patterns and stuff, trying to find this.
Right.
He backed himself into a corner.
Yep.
How do you get out of this?
And that's part of one of the reasons that he was pushing to find this place, was a place that he could hide from the authorities after these murders. But, I mean, I cannot get over the fact that he goes from calling himself Jesus to describing himself as Abaddon or Apollyon or Exterminus, right? The demon. No, but
he used those words.
That's the name of the demon of the abyss, right? He's describing himself as the ruler of the abyss. So he completely takes this idea of Christ, and we'll probably get to this more in the response sections, but he takes this idea of Christ here right? It gets all these followers and then turns around and exhibits the behavior and the push that's the literal absolute opposite of Jesus, right? Which the fact that he's calling himself the ruler of this bottomless pit, I think was what cemented it for me that there has to be some sort of occultic, demonic something going on here. Because,
well, a lot of cult leaders have this evolution. Jim Jones had the same thing. He used the preacher thing. He kind of referenced himself as Christ, but then eventually he kind of shut it off at the end. Himself
as Satan. Although,
I think he did, probably. Actually.
That's a whole different thing, because Abaddon is not Satan. But anyway.
I think he did, actually. And Jim and Charlie said...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Charles definitely did call himself the devil.
And then he also modified his message a little bit after he was in prison, right, and started doing interviews. Again, that whole insane game thing. He leaned way more heavy into that. That's when he carved a swastika into his face for the trial. He had his followers do that and cut off all their hair and things like that. And he really played into that more and more, I think, to be more popular.
For sure.
You know, he's never going to get out of prison, but as you mentioned, he had a lot of power inside jail already. And once they moved him, he had less power, but he was still wanted. Right. Like, people wanted to talk to him and hear from him. There were interviews with him 30 years later that were well watched and things. He was famous for a long time. It's 2023 now, and we're talking about him. And this happened in 1969, 70, 71, you know? I mean, and we're talking about him now.
About him now. You know, we make these returns back to dark times. And I think it's a good thing.
Well, you know, he pieced this theology together, but it all points back towards himself. And I think that's the difference. And we'll get to that more in the response thing, but that's the difference, is theology that points towards yourself versus points outwards.
Points towards Christ.
The points. Yep. You know, Jesus said, "I am the way, the life." And he wasn't following that at all. Yep. He was pointing back towards himself.
Yep. Well, Matt, I think there's a whole lot more that we could dig into on theology, but our goal is like 30-minute episodes, so we're at that point. So unless you have anything else to say, I think we should call it here.
Yeah, excellent. Let's call it here. So we will come back and talk some more Charlie Manson next week.
Thank you for joining us here on Faith, Frauds, and Falsehoods. Don't forget that we have our website, faithfraudsfalsehoods.com, where we post a more detailed blog with references so that you can go and take a look at all of this information for yourself. Also, remember to share this with a friend and help us get the word out there for everyone else. We'll see you in the next one.